Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Welcome back, folks. Several weeks ago, we talked to folks on both sides of the issue of the pogey industry, otherwise known as Manhattan. And it's been a real serious tug of war from a regulatory standpoint. And there's something known as bycatch. And it's other species of fish that are caught up in the purse seines, and whether or not that creates a problem as it relates to the population of certain species of fish in certain waters. And obviously, the Gulf Coast waters of the off the coast of the state of Louisiana is one of the most productive in the Gulf relative to Manhattan. And I think there's two or three different fishing operations that are that work out of this area. And here to talk to us about some of the studies relative to bycatch is Chris Macaluso, director of the Center for Marine Fisheries. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
So, Chris, I tried to lay out for the listening audience kind of the landscape of where we are. Please feel free to backfill if there's something else you think is important for them to know.
Sure, Newell. Well, I think you're pretty right on when it comes to, you know, the menhaden industry, the pogey industry, as we call it here in Louisiana. It's operated by two large companies. One of them has a processing plant. South of New Orleans and Empire, one of them has a processing plant near Abbeville. And the way these boats harvest fish is, number one, they generally harvest about a billion pounds or more, you know, generally about 1.2 billion pounds a year from the Gulf of Mexico. Roughly 90% of that comes off of Louisiana's coastal waters, about 70% of that from inside of the 3-mile limit. So it's a lot of fish. I mean, it's an incomprehensible amount of fish for most of us. It's the largest fishery by volume in the state of Louisiana. It's, I believe, second largest in the country. And associated with that fishery is something called bycatch, as you pointed out. What happens is fish that aren't intended to be caught in the nets along with the pogies are often caught. And, you know, what the industry will tell you and biologists will say is that bycatch number is a relatively low number by percentage. It can be up to 5% of the total catch. Generally, it's estimated to be somewhere in the 2 to 4% range. But when you start breaking the numbers down, you know, 2 to 4% of over a billion pounds is 40 million pounds of fish. So it can be a lot of fish. And primarily what you see caught in those nets are redfish, jack revel, sharks, but other fish, too, that we care about. Forage species like mullet and croakers and herring and other things that fish like to eat. So bycatch has been a significant problem. I think probably what draws the attention of the public the most when it comes to the impacts of the pogey fishery in Louisiana, number one is the net spills. Like, that's been pretty well documented in the media that the nets tear sometimes and fish wash up on the beach. But really what sticks in the craw of a lot of people who see these boats operating is the number of dead redfish and other fish that wash up on the beach and come out of the boats during the operations.
And part of the problem with the surveys that are done is that they're not really people on the boat taking these numbers, right? I mean, it's more of a guessing game, I guess.
Well, there have been studies in the past where researchers have been on the boat. It doesn't happen every year. There's not a required observer on every boat during the course of every fishing season for the menhaden industry. But during past studies, there have been researchers on the boat. A lot of that happened most recently in the wake of the oil spill. There was some money allotted to do observations on menhaden boats to look for bycatch. What the researchers have noted, though, is because of the volume of fish that are coming in to those nets, and we're talking about nets that are, 1,500 feet across. These are giant nets, bigger than a football field. There can be a lot of fish caught in that net. And when those fish are pumped into the boat through a giant vacuum hose that hangs over the side of the boat, when those fish are pumped into the boat, it's hard to distinguish sometimes what's a pogie and what's not. But we know this, that bigger breeding size redfish, big sharks, sometimes dolphins, sometimes sea turtles, sometimes big jackrabbit and things like that, don't necessarily get sucked in through that hose. There are guards on the boat and on the end of the hose that prevent those larger fish from going into the boat. It's actually illegal for those boats to retain some of those fish, so they're kicked back off the side. There's a couple of things to point out, too. Number one, once those fish are entrapped in the net, there's really no way of escaping. It's not like the shrimp industry that's got fish excluder devices or turtle devices on the nets. Once they're inside that purse seine net, they're not really getting out unless they're released. Number two, the estimates of the number of fish that survive that whole process, pretty low. Like, generally, it's estimated that at least two-thirds of the fish, even if they are released, that come into those nets are killed. In the case of redfish, we're talking about, what could be, I'd say on the low end, 12,000 or so fish a year, on the high end, easily over 20,000 a year. But that's the reason why there's a bycatch study that's ongoing this summer that's trying to drill down into those numbers a little bit better, that's going to use some more innovative techniques to try to see how many of those fish are surviving and to get a much better count of not only the menhaden but also the other fish that are in the net.
Sports fishermen are saying, and they believe, that there's a connection between, the volume of bycatch and the reduced number of certain species of fish that they're seeing. And I got to imagine that there's probably a collection of things that are impacting that. Your thoughts?
No, you're right about that. There's a number of things that are affecting speckled trout redfish populations. I would say the primary problem here is habitat loss. We've just lost a lot of marsh in this state. And for redfish especially, that's tough. Like, the kind of habitat that we've lost since the Mississippi River has been disconnected from the coastal marshlands. This is really the kind of habitat that redfish really rely on. It's that, that grassy, marshy, small pond, narrow waterway stuff that's been lost. Anybody who's been in the Barataria Basin in the last 40 or 50 years will tell you there's just so much open water. And that's obviously a problem. But there has been some studies come out of NOAA and the University of Florida recently that shows that, the combination of not only extracting menhaden, which is a primary food source at times for redfish and speckled trout, but also the bycatch associated, does have an effect. And that, if we want to recover redfish populations in this state, not only do we need to bring back some of the habitat that's been lost, but we do need to reduce the number of menhaden that are being caught, and we do need to get a better handle on the bycatch. And one of the things I think that needs to be pointed out is that, while the menhaden fishing season has started, it generally starts April 15th every year in Louisiana and the Gulf in general. Really, when those boats are focusing a lot of those efforts on harvesting menhaden, comes in the late summer and early fall. And it just happens to be in the same place where redfish like to aggregate and spawn. And so I think the reason why you see so many of those big fish show up on beaches and things like that and floating behind the boats when you get into the late summer and early fall is because those redfish are eating the pogies too. The same pogies those boats are trying to catch, those redfish are eating them. And it's obviously an issue. We're talking about, billions and billions of eggs potentially that are being lost from spawning redfish that are being killed in those nets. That's what this ongoing bycatch study that started this year is trying to get a better handle on. How many of those big fish are really being killed?
I mean, is this something that can be solved by alteration of the season?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know that.
Or improved? I mean, you know, and I bring that up because it always drove me crazy, Chris, where, you know, we'd have an amberjack season, right? And you go out there,
sure,
and you drop your line, and you're catching red snapper after red snapper after red snapper. Then you catch an amberjack, and you couldn't boat the red snapper. They're sitting around there like floating around like dead doormats on the surface, you know. And it just seems a waste. And I'm always kind of curious why we don't align seasons, because there's no way to tell. I mean, you know, you're dropping a line 800-900 feet down. I mean, you know.
Well, and I think what you've seen in terms of red snapper is, you know, we have been able to, like, you know, about 8 or 10 years ago, we really went to battle with the federal government here in Louisiana over what a red snapper season was going to look like, and try to align things with the other states where we could have better data collection, better accounting for red snapper, you know, the effort and the number of fish that were being caught here in Louisiana. So we were faced with the prospect of a 3-day red snapper season, you know, seven, eight years ago. Now we've got a red snapper season that's going to be at least 100 days, if not more. So some good corrective steps have been taken in that fishery. I think there's room, and obviously this would have to be with, you know, working with lawmakers, working with the Department of Wildlife Fisheries, working with biologists, working with the menhaden industry, to see if some adjustments or some closures could be made in some of these areas where you're seeing a lot of encounters with redfish. You know, I don't know that we're at that stage yet, but certainly identifying where those fish like to spawn and trying to provide some protection in those areas from this really intensive commercial harvest of menhaden, of one of their primary food sources, I think would be helpful. But again, that's something that's going to have to be determined after we look at this bycatch study. I mean, it's my inclination to believe that, you know, those redfish and those menhaden are out there at the same time for a reason. Mother Nature doesn't make a lot of mistakes like that. Those menhaden are out there. The redfish are definitely eating them. It's just a matter of getting a better handle on the data so that there's some scientific support there for saying, hey, if we really want to protect redfish, we need to make some changes here. And it's important right now to consider because, you know, just yesterday there was a meeting at the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries to take one of the last steps in setting new recreational redfish limits. And recreational fishermen, starting probably late this summer, are not going to be able to keep that one fish over 27 inches anymore of redfish. You know, meanwhile, the menhaden industry is killing a lot of them, and we need to get a better handle on that.
Well, it seemed to me that by now, Chris, we have a pretty good idea where the spawning grounds are, where they migrate to, the redfish, that is, in the season of the year where they migrate to. And I'm just curious, I mean, I know that the menhaden industry is looking at gross numbers, right? And it may be that an alteration of the schedule and the elongation of earlier, maybe, or starting earlier, might be the answer. And we would know in like 2 years, right? I mean, because you'd see the offspring that were born, you'd see the small 8, 9, 10, 11-inch redfish appearing relatively quickly.
Well, and again, I think that we do have a pretty good understanding of where redfish like to spawn and how they spawn. There's been a lot of studies conducted by the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries and LSU and others to look at that, you know, and to determine how those spawning aggregates happen and what they're feeding on and that kind of stuff. I do think there's some more room for some additional scientific research, but possibility of taking that additional step to protect certain areas where those fish like to spawn, you know, especially the areas like right out of Empire and around the Grand Isle area. I mean, you know, we know redfish spawn from about August 15th, really, you know, into September and October. That just happens to coincide when you've got a lot, like I said before, you got a lot of menhaden activity that takes place at that time. you know, I think there are steps that need to be taken to provide some additional protection for the redfish. But I want to see how this bycatch study plays out. I want to see some additional steps that can be taken to set what's called ecological management for menhaden, which means looking at that fish based on what has to eat it and the role that it plays in the ecosystem, rather than simply just looking at it as that one single species to harvest and process.
Yeah, I mean, it's a delicacy for a lot of different species, is it not? I mean, if I had a dollar for every trout I caught while using live pogies, I'd be a wealthy man.
Well, and I mean, that's a great point. Everything eats them. And it represents, I think, a significant part of the food source for the fish that we think are important. You know, redfish, speckled trout, king mackerel, Spanish mackerel, jacks, sharks. You know, primarily when you're looking at larger fish that are, you know, bycatch for redfish, it's those fish. It's mackerel, it's jacks, it's sharks, it's redfish. To a certain extent, it's sea trout. You know, we know that those fish are being captured in the net. We just don't know how many. We don't have a good hard number on it. But look, the best science coming out of both the federal government and some of the universities that have taken a look at this, including the University of Florida, says that we do need to reduce the numbers of pogies being caught right now if we want to leave enough menhaden, enough pogies in the water for those fish to eat. And it's the same rationale that was used in the Atlantic to set their ecological management structure, to put limits on the amount of menhaden that could be harvested, to make sure that you've got, you know, healthy striped bass or healthy bluefish, you know, healthy, you know, bluefin tuna, other things on the Atlantic coast that eat menhaden. And I think it's time to take those similar steps here in the Gulf. How many menhaden do redfish need to eat? How many menhaden do trout need to eat? Let's figure that out, and let's set some real enforceable catch limits based on those numbers.
Is it safe to say that the Louisiana coastline is the last bastion of that really hadn't looked at those types of studies that way and set limits?
Yeah, the Gulf is really, and again, because 90% of that harvest comes out of Louisiana, it's primarily a Louisiana issue, but the Gulf is unique in that there really isn't a catch limit on the menhaden industry here, whereas there has been in the Atlantic for a while. And most recently, as I mentioned, it's based on the ecosystem. It's based on, you know, how many menhaden need to be in the water for striped bass to eat. The process has started here in the Gulf. The research has been done. I think it's ongoing research that needs to be augmented and continued to be pursued. But there is going to be a push, I think, over the next, you know, 6 to 8 years. And it's starting now. But to put in a catch limit in place that takes into consideration what the predator fish need to eat. It hasn't been done here in the Gulf. There really is no enforceable catch limit. Really, the catch limit on the menhaden industry is based on what can be hard and, you know, caught and processed. But also, you know, how many fish can you harvest before you cause a collapse in that menhaden fishery, right? Like, how many fish can be taken out of the water before that fish itself starts to decline and potentially collapse? That's what the limit's based on right now. It's not based on what the other needs of the fish in the Gulf are. And that's the kind of push that I think is going to come from fisheries regulators, is to put in that kind of ecologically based catch limit so that the redfish and the trout and the jacks and the sharks have enough food to eat.
Right. Well, it's obviously a very complicated issue, one that we'll keep our finger on the pulse of. We really appreciate your time and insight, and we'll see where this all leads. Chris Macaluso, Director of the Center for Marine Fisheries, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Newell. It's been a pleasure.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We've got a good few moments. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a shout.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.